You're listening to KVNF Mountain Grown Community Radio, special election coverage. I'm Ariana Brocious. KVNF has been broadcasting debates that were hosted by Club 20 in Grand Junction on September 8th. Club 20 is a coalition of individuals, businesses, tribes, and local governments across Western Colorado that focuses on marketing, education, and political action. Today, we'll be listening to a special hour-long debate between three candidates for Colorado's 3rd Congressional District, Republican incumbent Scott Tipton, Democratic challenger Sal Pace, and Independent challenger Tisha Cassida.
So our opening remarks, we're going to start with Tisha Cassida, and then followed by Sal Pace, and then by Congressman Scott Tipton. So, Ms. Cassida.
First of all, thank you so much for the opportunity to be here this evening. It's an honor to be representing a large group of voters in our district. The reason there's a large number of unaffiliated and independent voters in our district is because a lot of people are frustrated and upset with both political parties. Both political parties, in essence, are a collective right, and collective rights eventually erode the rights of the individual, of property owners. Now, this is, in essence, a democracy. In a democracy, you have majority rule, and the majority eventually erodes the vote and the voice of the minority. Well, this is an issue because our country is not a democracy. Our country is a constitutional republic. As you'll see with my platform, I believe that the federal government is engaging in some things that it shouldn't be doing, and some of the things that it should be doing, it's being very ineffective at. For the things that it's engaging in that it's ineffective at, a lot of these things could be pushed down to the state and local level, where there's more transparency and accountability for our representatives. If you have an issue or a problem and you want to petition your grievances, it's easier to go to the county courthouse or the state capitol than it is to hop in a jet and fly to Washington, D.C. That's why I'm running as an independent or as an unaffiliated candidate, because I want to be accountable to you, not to a political party. Representative Pace and Representative Tipton are going to be loyal and allegiant to their party and to any special interests that may help fund them and get them into office. Now, let me tell you something. Party loyalty and party allegiance has done absolutely nothing to foster cooperation and sound decision-making for the American people and for Coloradans. For me, as a candidate and someone that wants to represent you at the federal level of government, I want immediate solutions for our economy, for energy independence, for property rights, and to protect our natural rights and civil liberties.
Okay, for our next opening remarks, Sal.
Thank you, President Foster. Thank you, Club 20, Congressman Tipton, Tisha, the rose between two thorns. It's great to be here in Grand Junction. I hear it's the Democratic stronghold of the district. I want to start by introducing my family, my beautiful wife, Marlene, our children, Wyatt, Carlo, and Alana. It's with their love and support that I'm able to take on this venture. I'm the son of a mechanic. I'm the youngest of nine kids. Our family, we live in a small or modest home in Central Pueblo, and the price of gas, food, and utilities at the end of each month, we have a hard time putting away money for savings. And I can't but help feel that it's time for the rest of us, people like you and me, to have a voice again in Congress. There are too many people who are hurting with unemployment, with people losing their homes, people facing bankruptcy. In my own family, my Aunt Camille, a year ago, she had a stroke. She lost everything she ever owned because of her medical bills. She passed away in poverty this last March. This is not the promise that this country is founded on, a promise that if you work hard, you play by the rules, you can retire in dignity. Instead, what we're getting out of Washington is more partisanship, more gridlock. A few weeks ago in Alamosa, Congressman Tipton and I debated this topic. I said, we need more bipartisanship. We need people who can work together. And Congressman Tipton's response was, now is not the time to get along. Not getting along has caused gridlock. Gridlock means we don't have a permanent transportation bill. Gridlock means we don't have a farm bill. We don't have a budget. Gridlock means payroll tax fight, the super committee fight, the debt ceiling fight, and it means we have sequestration around the corner. That is a result of gridlock. In my time in the legislature, I have fought to legislate in a bipartisan fashion, bring people together. This is a stark contrast with a congressman who's voted almost 100% of the time with his party leadership. This district historically, dating back to Wayne Aspinall, has been a district with people who can work across the aisle. We're not getting that today. And I think it's time that people like farmers and ranchers have a voice again, that business people have a voice again, that students have a voice again, that people like you and me, that the rest of us have a voice again in Congress.
And our third candidate's opening remarks, Scott.
Thank you, Tim. And I'd like to thank Club 20, Colorado Mesa University, for putting on this event. Would like to take a moment to be able to recognize my family, my wife, Jean, and our two daughters, Liesl and Elizabeth. I'm very proud to have you here this evening. You know, as many of you know, I'm not a career politician. I'm a small businessman. Started my own business right after college on a $10,000 loan that we paid back within 6 months. But as a small businessman, I've been able to take those common sense values to Washington, to be able to stand up for the values that are important to this district. When the National Forest Service was putting forward a move to be able to require us on federal lands to sign over water rights to the federal government, we pushed back and we were successful. When we saw the Department of Labor come out with a rule that was not going to allow our children to be able to work on the family farm, we pushed back and we won. You need to be able to learn on the family farm. In the office that I hold, we've been able to work with Democrats, work with Republicans, to be able to pass 5 bills through the full House of Representatives. These are bills that reflect the values of where we live, the values of our lifestyle. To be able to work with veterans, and most importantly, probably right now, to be able to get our people back to work. We sit in a county that has 19.5% real unemployment. This election is about consequences, and it is about outcomes. I have an opponent in this race that voted for a $250 million tax increase on hardworking Coloradoans, punishing rural Colorado the most with the license plate fees that we now pay. If you have a truck, if you have a four-wheel drive vehicle that you need to be able to drive for safety, he thought it was more important to be able to collect money than to be able to take consideration the impact here at home. He also voted for another $200 million tax increase that hurt small businesses, particularly the farm and ranch community, now having to pay a tax on products that they need to be able to grow the crops that we eat on our table. This is a man who voted to actually increase taxes on small restaurants down to the straws, the napkins, and the little packets of sugar that are there, hurting small businesses that are working out of homes, trying to work on the internet, hurting jobs. This is an election that will have outcomes. This is a crossroads election. I've been dedicated to standing up for creating jobs, standing up for the values of this, the 3rd Congressional District, and I appreciate being here with you this evening.
Now we'll enter into the second phase of our debate, which is going to be the question phase. We'll have 6 questions, one by Susan Alvear, one by Jasper Welch, and one by Sandra Rogers, and each candidate will have 2 minutes to answer each question, and we'll rotate the order. And so the first question will come from Ms. Alvear, and it will be answered in this order by Ms. Cassata, by Sal, and then by Scott.
Job creation in the 3rd Congressional District is essential to vibrant local and state economies. Based on your business experience and elected official background, what specific federal programs, legislation, research, or changes in regulations will enhance company and job creation in Colorado?
I don't think that the federal government or many governments are effective at creating beneficial job environments. I think that governments, and the reason for governments as far as a philosophical background, is they're there as force and they're there to implement law. For us to be able to create a stronger economy, not only in this county, in our district, in the state, and in the country, is we have to stop with the bureaucracy and red tape that's coming from the federal government. Instead, what we need to do is roll out the red carpet for businesses. I can tell you, as far as working as an entrepreneur and trying to do marketing for a lot of small business clients, as well as with my Colorado real estate license that I never could really get off the ground, that one of the biggest issues is regulations that don't actually have a positive effect for people, for individuals. So I don't think that there are any beneficial federal programs when it comes to actually developing the economy. What we need to look at is monetary policy, our money, the value of our money, our wealth, and our ability to create wealth and pass down that wealth to future generations. So the federal government can work on that, and that will help the economy. But as far as actual job programs, the best thing that we could do right now is get rid of some of the red tape for businesses.
People are hurting. There are people who are suffering in this tough economy. And all we're getting out of Congress is more gridlock, more fighting, the inability to get anything done. There's so much that people agree on. People agree that rural infrastructure investment makes sense. We need rural broadband so that we can have location-neutral business come to places like Mesa County. We need to ensure that we have workforce development because we have good workforce development, 2.5 million job postings in America today that are being unmet because we're not meshing up the right job skills. We do have to look at the tax code and make sure that our tax code is encouraging job growth and not discouraging it. Right now, a business can write off the expense of sending a job overseas as on their taxes. That's unpatriotic. We have to pass the farm bill, which Congress hasn't done. As far as cutting regulation, I'm the only person on this stage who has passed a bill to cut regulation. When the steel mill in Pueblo and the cement factory said that they had a backlog at the air quality control department at the state health department, which administers a Clean Air Act in Colorado, I passed a bill to cut the red tape, to speed up the process. We did it in a bipartisan fashion. It's the same type of approach I'm going to take to Washington. We also supported a bill that Colorado Oil and Gas Association called the number one piece of legislation for their industry in the last decade. That was 1365 to encourage clean-burning natural fuels. This is a bill that was sponsored by Josh Penry, and Congressman Tipton refused to support. I'd like to know why Congressman Tipton refused to support the natural gas industry right here in the Western Slope.
Scott, your turn.
One of the best things that we can do to recognize in this country is government does not create jobs. The private sector actually does. And if you've got a small business in this country, you did build it. And we need to be standing up for the private sector in this community. I voted for legislation called the RAINS Act to be able to rein in those regulatory concerns that we all have that are hurting and killing jobs in the United States. We just passed another piece of legislation, the Red Tape Moratorium Bill, to make sure that we are not adding more regulation on top of struggling businesses that are already having a hard time to be able to get by. I've been able to pass through the House of Representatives the Small Hydroelectric and Jobs Act of 2012, and the Planning for America's Energy Future Act to be able to get our people back to work. And Mr. Pace, when you're talking about 1365, let me tell you, you may not care about coal jobs here in Western Colorado. I do, and I will stand up and fight for it.
Okay, our second question will be asked by Jasper Welch. The order of answering will be Sal, Scott, and then Ms. Cassidy.
Thank you, Tim, and to our candidates, thank you for your participation tonight. The second question is one about our water. What should be done to ensure adequate water supplies in rural Colorado specifically in the Colorado River Basin. Sal?
Thank you, Jasper. I'm proud of my record on water. I have a strong record in the legislature. I ran a piece of legislation to protect basins of origin from dry up from other communities. I worked with the Colorado River District. The Farm Bureau supported many other organizations. It was a piece of legislation that most of the Western Slope legislators supported. Congressman Tipton, when he was in the legislature, refused to support it. I passed a bill to encourage conservation by urban communities because we need to ensure that that they're not using as much water so they have to come and dry up our part of the state. I also passed a bill to create a special district in order to clean up one of the dirtiest rivers in the state while making the polluters pay for it. In stark contrast, Congressman Tipton, I misspoke, he did support the bill, but he refused to sign on as a co-sponsor for the Basin of Origin bill. He's had high-dollar fundraisers hosted by Gary Boyce, who was the father of AWDI, the water grab attempt to take water from rural Colorado and send it to Denver. And he refused to support an amendment to a piece of legislation in Congress to study water quality right here on the Colorado River Basin. Our actions speak much louder than words. The water community on the Western Slope needs a voice again in Congress.
Scott?
Water, as we all know, is the lifeblood of Colorado. We were able to hold a congressional hearing that I'd requested from Chairman McClintock to be able to plan Colorado water storage. We've got to make sure, when we cast envious eyes on last year's runoff compared to this year, to be able to create those opportunities to make sure that we are holding on to Colorado's water. A bill that I just passed out of the full Natural Resources Committee that I'm hoping will have a vote soon on the floor is the Healthy Forest Management Wildfire Act of 2012. To be able to allow the state of Colorado to be making determinations in terms of the bark beetle kill, the standing and dead timber, to be able to get in and clean that out. Because we've all got to remember, part of our water storage here in Colorado is actually our forests. Slowing down that melt, we need to be promoting healthy forests. That is legislation that we're going to continue to actually promote. You know, Mr. Pace likes to talk that he wants to be bipartisan. You saw just a great example talking about that amendment in Congress for a water study bill. You're all about partisanship. That's why it was put up. A study is already being conducted. He wants to pay for another one before one is done. I think we need to not only be smart about our water, but how we spend our money and not duplicate process.
Ms. Cassidy?
Of course, to agree with both of these guys, water is an incredibly important resource for our state, as is all of our natural resources. Running for a federal office, as I've kind of mentioned in my introduction, I don't think that the federal government should be dictating policy what we do with our natural resources. Although I am a candidate and I'm still learning about the water issues and all of the different seven districts and seven areas in the state, I can tell you that I'm sure that there are already federal regulations that make it difficult for stakeholders in Colorado, in each county and in each district, to make decisions about what they do, whether it's the conservancy districts, the conservation districts, or the nonprofit organizations that are a special interest and that are interested in protecting these. I do commend Representative Tipton for introducing the Healthy Forest Management Act, but I don't think that we should have to ask permission from the federal government to do things with our public lands. I think that our public lands could still be in with the government, but at the Colorado state level. And I believe that Colorado citizens should stand to benefit from both the use and the conservation of these lands. So for me running as a federal representative, I would like to work on cutting the red tape and cutting out the regulations that we're duplicating at the state and local level and causing confusion and making it more difficult to not only protect our water resources, but also use our water resources.
Our third question will be from Sandra Rogers, and we'll answer it in this order: Scott, Ms. Cassidy, and Sal. Sandra?
Candidates, How would you put Medicare on stronger financial ground and protect today's seniors and future retirees from the burden of rising health costs?
I appreciate that question. It's important. Do we have any people in here that are 55 years or older? Anybody that care to say, not admitting that you're 55 or older? The bill that we passed through the House of Representatives for you with Medicare, nothing changes. Nothing changes. We're standing up for our seniors. I made a pledge when I ran for office 2 years ago to make sure that we stood up for our senior citizens. Every vote has reflected that commitment. But every senior citizen I know also cares for their children and their grandchildren. These aren't my numbers. They're the president's numbers. 2024, Medicare goes bankrupt. We've heard no plan from Mr. Pace in terms of how are you going to make Medicare sustainable. We need it for his generation so that we can make that promise fulfilled to them. They're going to call it a voucher. He's already writing it down. It's not a voucher. If you have that choice, you can stay on Medicare, or you're going to have a menu of choices, much like Medicare Part D, which is very popular with many senior citizens right now, to be able to make sure that we are driving those costs down. And we need to make sure that we're having real competition as well. We need to repeal again Obamacare in this country. This is driving up costs. This is hurting jobs. It is bankrupting the Medicare system. It is inflaming the Medicaid system in this country. We have better proposals that are out there to allow competition to work, to incentivize private medical health care savings accounts, to make sure that if you're a small business, you can actually come together to be able to negotiate even better rates as well.
Ms. Cassidy?
This is a very important issue to me because, of course, my grandmother is on Medicare and I love her dearly, and my parents will be on it soon. And so I think that the first thing we have to look back at is the taproot of the problem. And the problem with Medicare is that it's not sustainably funded. Now, to correct this is going to take working together in Congress, and I am not optimistic that that's going to happen anytime soon. So another thing we need to focus on is what is making it so expensive. Well, inflation contributes to all of us and our ability to pay for things. So monetary policy, whether you like it or not, and I'm going to come back to this over and over again, our money and the soundness of our money is an extremely important issue that should be focused on at the federal level. Of all the things the federal government is doing, this is incredibly important. This is especially important for people who are on fixed incomes, like my grandmother. And so Medicare, I think, again, I'm not a big fan of the federal government engaging in activities. It's an inefficient machine. I think we're seeing that. We definitely need to have competition and allow private insurance companies to sell across state lines and have competition. However, in addition to this, I understand that people have paid into this system. I look at it as a contractual obligation from the federal government, and it's our federal government's role to fulfill that contract with the people. For the next generation upcoming, however, if they want to opt out of this, just like if they want to opt out of Social Security and use their own money to invest in their own health care or invest in their own retirement, I do believe that we should start working on reforming the system so that people have the opportunity and the option to opt out and make their own decisions what they do with their money and with their health care.
I think it's great to have a debate, but one thing we should all agree on is that we base it on facts. If you're older than 55, the donut hole comes back immediately for you, meaning that more prescription drugs cost more money under the Tipton-Ryan budget. In addition, it is a voucher. Senior citizens will have to go onto the private marketplace and purchase private insurance. This is the first, we've been running for a year against each other, and this is the first time Congressman Tipton has said it's not a voucher. If it wasn't a voucher, I'm sure I would have heard it a long time ago from Congressman Tipton. My dad's back there. He's 74. I was in the hospital with him when the doctors were pounding on his chest to revive him a couple years ago. He's on his third pacemaker, and there's absolutely no way, living on Social Security as a retired mechanic, that he could go into the private marketplace and purchase insurance because of his pre-existing conditions. And a lot of seniors have a lot of pre-existing conditions. The truth with the Tipton-Ryan budget is seniors, and this is from the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office, seniors will have to pay $6,400 out of pocket to have the same type of care that they already have today. I think it's important that we address the real issues. We have to look at the fee-for-service model. We have to look at the parts of Obamacare that we agree on. We have to work together. But Congressman Tipton, 33 votes in 2 years to repeal Obamacare. When did you expect a different result? After vote 15, 20, 30? The fact is you didn't expect a different result. It's just more partisanship out of Washington that we're all sick and tired of.
Our fourth question, which will be by Ms. Alviar, and will be ordered by answered by Ms. Cassada, Sal, and then Scott in that order. Ms. Alviar.
Candidates, what is your position regarding development of the nation's energy resources on public lands?
Running for a federal seat, I don't think that the federal government has any role in dictating energy policy to the American people, nor to Coloradans and people in this district. We have immense energy resources in our district, both renewable and non-renewable. Many times, the Department of Energy and other regulatory agencies get in the way of developing this. Not only coal and oil and gas, but also wind and solar and geothermal energy. It's really important to find ways that we can stop the federal government from stopping us from developing our resources. I do think that there is a way for companies to come in and lease public lands, whether it's from a county, a city, the state, and find a way that these companies, with their lease, pay money directly back to the citizens. The government is really good at taking money away from us. They have a mechanism to give it back to us, too. So instead of these companies paying money to the government agencies, be it the state or the county, I would really like to talk about eventually, and I don't know if it's possible or not, but have companies paying the people themselves. Then the people in those communities become stakeholders of energy development. When people have a financial tie and a potential get financial help from having energy in their community, that may change the discussion. And it's really important to include the stakeholders of the district, of the community, in what they want developed in their district and in their community. And that goes both ways, not only for developing your resources to bring in profit and bring in money to the community, but also how to regulate and how to protect those communities' resources.
Sal?
Energy development in the 3rd Congressional District of all types means jobs, whether it's natural gas or it is solar. We have the largest solar plant in the entire state in the San Luis Valley, or wind development, as we have the largest wind turbine manufacturer in the world in Pueblo, Colorado. And it's also a national security issue. We have to free ourselves from the dependence on foreign oil. There is absolutely a role for development of our resources on federal land, and it's about balance and it's about respect. We have to have a balanced approach. We have to respect each other. We have to respect the land, the water, and we can all coexist. At the end of the day, though, I think the most important piece is it has to be a case-by-case scenario. We have to have the local community engaged in these decisions, and a one-size-fits-all approach from Washington, from either perspective, is never going to work for our public lands.
Scott?
One of the toughest things that you get to hear as you're traveling through the 3rd Congressional District right now, young moms at a gas pump, They're trying to figure out how many gallons of gasoline to be able to put in that vehicle and still be able to buy groceries. It's also the story of senior citizens that are seeing their energy costs go up as well. It is incumbent on this nation to pursue energy self-sufficiency, and the 3rd Congressional District of Colorado can play a very critical role in that. You know, I passed a bill through the House of Representatives, Planning for America's Energy Future. It calls for all of the above: wind, solar, geothermal, hydroelectric, oil, gas, oil shale, minerals, and nuclear power and coal as well. This is good common sense. It does not eliminate any of the environmental requirements, but it is going to be necessary for this nation. When we see what's happening right now in the Middle East and the challenges that we are facing there, if we look at the economic impact on this country, let's put Americans to work. Let's develop these resources here in the United States of America. This bill will require the Secretary of Interior, working with the Secretary of Agriculture, to actually develop a plan for responsible development of these resources on our public lands based off of a 30-year nonpartisan estimate of energy needs in this country. This is what we need, not talk about a balanced approach with no real solutions, but a bill like I've proposed that will seek solutions, lower our gas prices, and get our people back to work.
You're listening to KVNF's special election coverage, Club 20 Debates. Today, we're hearing a debate between 3 candidates for Colorado's 3rd Congressional District: Republican incumbent Scott Tipton, Democratic challenger Sal Pace, and Independent challenger Tisha Cassidy. Now, back to the debate.
Jasper Welch will ask question 5, and we'll answer it in the order of Sal, Scott, and Ms. Cassidy.
Thank you, Tim. The next question is about money. The federal government is overspending and has borrowed over $1 trillion each year over the past recent years. The president appointed the Simpson-Bowles Commission for Fiscal Responsibility and Reform to address these issues. What specific steps do you recommend regarding tax policy, tax rates, reduction in federal spending, and programs to address the fiscal crisis?
This is a critical issue for the future of the country. I'm a Democrat who's willing to buck my own party and say that I believe in a balanced budget amendment. We can balance the budget as we've done in Colorado every year. Just like 48 other states, we have an amendment to do it. We did it this year in Colorado at the State House by 64-1 vote. There's a lot of waste in government. Last year, in Congressman Tipton's his leadership in Congress, we built 10 DDG destroyers at $1 billion apiece. There's that the Department of Defense said they didn't even want. We also allow people to write off as a second home the cost of a yacht, a boat. There's so much that we have to look at. I think Simpson-Bowles is a great starting point. As far as taxes, I'm the only person up here on this stage who's ever passed a bill to cut taxes and signed into law. I passed a bill this past session to eliminate the estate tax for farmers and ranchers on the Colorado books in perpetuity. In stark contrast, voting for the Tipton-Ryan budget, Congressman Tipton raised taxes on every single one of you who makes less than $200,000 a year. And at the end of the day, it's about not abusing the taxpayers' trust. When Congressman Tipton sends no-bid contracts to his family, when his staff is the highest-paid staff amongst all freshmen, when he uses taxpayer dollars to campaign in Eagle County, and when he was running for Congress 2 years ago as a state legislator, and he claimed 19 out of 120 days per diem, that's abusing the taxpayers' trust. My promise is you'll never get a headline like this out of me when I'm your congressman. Tipton violates House rules in the Denver Post.
Scott?
Scott?
Politics as usual. We don't want to talk about jobs. We don't want to talk about the 19.5% unemployment in Mesa County, 12.2% unemployment in Pueblo County. He wants to play politics. Fact is, Mr. Pace, I returned $190,000 to the U.S. Treasury out of our office last year. Here's the real challenge. We do need to have a new tax policy. You call up the IRS right now, they can't give you an answer that you can count on. We have passed legislation calling for a flatter, fairer, and simpler tax. The only person right now on this stage that is actually, if you're supporting President Obama, that is calling for a tax increase is Mr. Pace. That is the truth. We've got to be able to have a policy. The proposals that we are putting forward call for two tax brackets, a 10% tax bracket and a 25% tax bracket. But here's what we do. We're eliminating actual loopholes. We're going to eliminate those loopholes. We're going to lower the tax rate. We're going to make the United States of America competitive and put more money back in the hip pockets of hardworking Americans rather than sending it to Washington, D.C. to be able to build another program.
Ms. Cassidy?
Money is everything, and our country is broke. I think it's, of course, one of the most important things to focus on is our debt and how we're going to get rid of that. As a matter of fact, it might be impossible to actually get rid of all the debt that we have right now with inflation and the other variables that are affecting that. I think that the IRS and the income tax are legalized theft. I do think we need to have drastic reform of our tax policies, and I think that it has to start with discussions about a flat tax or a fair tax. But drastic changes in our tax policy are absolutely necessary for us and for future generations. I think, too, that, again, these conversations we can have here, but I don't know how effective it's going to be in Washington, D.C. Another thing we have to focus on immediately is if we don't get Washington fixed and if we don't root out all of the corruption in Washington, D.C., and if neither Mr. Pace or Mr. Tipton are able to introduce and pass legislation that is then enforced that actually fixes any of these problems, what can we do at a state and local level to hedge against a potential pending economic collapse? And one of the things that I'm a proponent of is at least talking about state banks, competing currencies, making sure that people are always able to barter and have transactions with one another, and make sure that the heavy hand of the federal government does not get in the way of people having exchange, especially people who are on a very low minimal income. A lot of people, and I talk to them, I'm one of them, are struggling to survive. And it's very important coming up that we focus on solutions, again, at this local, county, and state level to make sure we protect our wealth and protect our ability to continue to have exchange with one another.
Okay, as we get ready for our last question, when Les holds up the stop sign, guys, that means stop. So I'll try and rein you in a little harder so we don't run over quite so much. Sandra Rogers is going to ask the last question. Scott, Ms. Cassidy, and Sal, in that order. Sandra?
This past summer, western Colorado and other forested parts of the state experienced destructive wildfires that adversely impacted wildlife, forested lands, and private property in or adjacent to public lands. What is your approach to rebuild the aging USFS firefighting and wildfire management capacity?
You know, I really appreciate that question. As Coloradoans, we have a real love for the scenery that we see. We need to be able to get in and manage these forests. I took a tour recently down in Pagosa Springs, went out with the forest rangers. They told us that we are paying the price of 100 years of poor forest management. I've introduced legislation that has just now passed out of the Natural Resources Committee, the Healthy Forest Management Wildfire Act of 2012. This will empower our governor, John Hickenlooper, working with our local county commissioners to be able to go in and identify areas of imminent threat. We put in some categorical exclusions, which are good common sense, to be able to protect our children around schools. under the power lines that run through our forest, to be able to treat those areas as well. We've also got that exclusion to be able to protect our water along our streams and around our reservoirs as well. A good, common sense piece of legislation whose time should have come a long time ago. We've passed this bill out of natural resources. I'm very hopeful we're going to be able to get a vote on this soon on the full House of Representatives floor. This is going to be the real solution in terms of dealing with these wildfires. When I was out on the fire line of the Debeck fire, I toured that, and it was expressed to me by members of the BLM that they're concerned that the fire burned so hot the land is sterilized. Same issues on the fire line that I was at the Weber Canyon fire in southwest Colorado as well. We're seeing poor forest management hurt the entire state. Right now, the Poudre River is going to be experiencing the 100-year flood on an average once every 5 years because the vegetation will now not grow back. We need to have this common sense legislation.
Thank you, Congressman. Ms. Cassidy?
I'm not a big fan of asking permission from the federal government to protect my Colorado resources. The fires in Colorado Springs recently hit very close to home. Actually, a member of my campaign staff had family who lost their home and lost some of their commercial property. As far as how I understand how people have to, the chain of command and asking for permission to protect our resources, I don't think that we should have to go through that and ask permission for the federal government. I think that Colorado and counties within Colorado should have access to funds and access to means to protect things like our forests when they hit. When disaster strikes and when emergency hits, the last thing you want to do is be trying, but have to call and ask permission to use various types of equipment. And so believe it or not, ties into foreign policy. I am an advocate that our Colorado National Guard should be here in Colorado protecting Coloradans. I'm very frustrated that we have troops firefighting in other countries when they should be here at home fighting fires. And so the Colorado National Guard, if you go back and if you look at our Constitution and how our states are set up, we should really have some mechanism here at home to protect people, to protect Coloradans specifically. So I guess long story short, again, I don't think we should ask permission. And I don't necessarily think that passing legislation in the Congress will actually have any benefit for us. I don't think we can ask permission. I think we have to take that power back at the state and local level.
Sal?
We're at a greater risk because of the failures in Congress. We have not passed a farm bill in Congress, which addresses bark beetle mitigation. The Tipton-Ryan budget cuts dollars for forest fire mitigation. There is an amendment a couple months ago on a bill that would have addressed forest fire mitigation. Congressman Tipton voted for it at first. The machine was open for 15 minutes. He was a yes vote for 14 minutes, and at the very last minute flipped to a no. It'd be great to know what party leadership promised him to ask him to vote against the Democrats' amendment. That's exactly what's wrong with Washington. What we have to do to address forest fire mitigation, we have to work with the locals. We have to allow private entities to get onto public lands to help clean it up and sell some of the product. It makes sense to have smart roads in public lands and not shut down the ability to open up new roads. And what we've done at the legislature, we worked in a collaborative fashion. This is exactly what we need more of in Washington. And we passed a bill to encourage those who would like to get into public lands to cut down prospective timber, to work with federal government, state agencies to actually get it done. That's exactly not what we're getting out of Washington today.
Thank you, Susan Jasper and Sandra. We're going to move into our second to last stage, which is going to allow each of the three candidates to have 3 minutes apiece where you control the time and get to ask each one another questions as you see fit. The order that we'll go through on what we call the cross-examination phase is Ms. Cassada, Sal, and Scott. Ms. Cassada?
First of all, I would like to ask, let me precurse this just a little bit. As of August 7th, there were over 3,400 bills in the Senate, over 6,100 bills in the House of Representatives. This does not include resolutions, joint resolutions, and concurrent resolutions. So this is thousands of pieces of legislation that our current Congress is attempting to pass. And actually, at first it goes through a process. But do you have the opportunity to read through every page of all of the bills that you sponsor, co-sponsor, and vote on?
Yes.
So you are telling the audience and myself that you read every single page of every single piece of legislation.
We do read through every single page, and we do analysis as well. We do have staff to be able to look through it. But I think that's pretty good policy. We had Congressman, you were on his staff, Sal, that didn't bother to read a bill. I think that's important.
And Representative Tipton, what do you think is our greatest threat to national security?
You know, right now, we've obviously got multiple challenges that we're facing. We have the threat of Al-Qaeda, people who would like to be able to harm this nation. The national debt of this nation, $16 trillion in debt, is preeminent in terms of the real threat to this nation. And the stranglehold and the boot that Washington, D.C. has on small business trying to be able to create jobs, that is one of the greatest threats that we have to prosperity in this country.
And then, do you know, and if you do, the role of the county sheriff in the counties of Colorado's 29 districts in CD3?
I'm sorry, ma'am, would you repeat that?
The role of the county sheriff for each county.
The role of the county sheriff? Yeah, I think I'm reasonably familiar with it.
Could you give just a quick overview of what the role of the county sheriff is for people in, say, Mesa County?
The role of the sheriff is obviously to provide for the protection of the citizenry, to be able to oversee their administrative offices, and generally just to provide for the public safety.
That's great.
Okay. Sal, I think you're next with your 3 minutes.
Thank you. Congressman Tipton, do you know how many dollars of taxpayer dollars you sent in no-bid contracts to businesses owned by your family?
Zero.
Congressman Tipton, according to the House Disbursement Office, it's $26,223.95, and you can read a number of articles, including the Denver Post, to confirm that you have sent money there. It might make sense to get a better control of your office.
Sorry, Sal, you're wrong again.
Congressman Tipton, yes or no question. Is Michael Fortney your employee?
On my campaign.
Do you agree with his statements that you feel good about higher gas prices, higher unemployment, and higher national debt because it improves your ability to get reelected?
You know, Sal, if you'd actually been listening to my comments, I'm introducing legislation to be able to lower gas prices, to be able to stand up for the consumers, to be able to help those moms that are driving those SUVs, and make sure that we're getting lower gas prices in this country by developing jobs right here in the 3rd Congressional District.
Congressman Tipton, you confirmed that Michael Fortney is your employee on your campaign. You've been running for Congress 6 out of the last 8 years. During that time, every single person who's worked on your campaign, you have classified as a contract employee. We voted on a bill together in the legislature about misclassification. While everyone else here pays taxes on their employees, everyone else has to pay workers' comp, everyone else has to pay Social Security, payroll tax. In 6 years, over the last 8 years, raising and spending millions of dollars, you don't think you're responsible for paying those same taxes, is that correct?
Mr. Pace, when you're hiring somebody to work for you for a few months, that is contract labor. That is also the law, sir.
Congressman Tipton, when Gary Boyce helped you raise money at a high-dollar fundraiser in Denver, did you make any have any discussions with him about his water project? Do you agree with his plan to dry up rural Colorado to send all the water to Denver?
If you look at my record, I've been the most vocal proponent of protecting the 3rd Congressional District's water. And if you're going to make that type of an extension, you might want to explain the $4,000 you've received from Nancy Pelosi and the $158,000 you've received from big union bosses.
Congressman Tipton. Congressman Tipton, when you got to Congress, you put your name on the Natural Gas Act to encourage more compressed natural gas fuels. Why did you take your name off that?
We have time. Thanks. Sorry. Okay, Scott, your time for the cross-examination phase.
Mr. Pace, I'll try and make it simple for you. It can just be yes or no. Would you have voted for the Keystone Pipeline?
I think the line from Oklahoma to Texas makes sense. Absolutely.
Oklahoma to Texas, you don't want to complete the line?
I don't think we should be subsidizing a Canadian company.
So you don't oppose the Keystone Pipeline?
I think half of the line makes sense, getting
Thanks.
Our product
I appreciate
to
that.
Market.
We need to be able to get those jobs right now, and they are shovel-ready with zero tax dollars.
I support the American jobs, not the Canadian jobs.
No, Ms. Pay, I just kind of curious, okay, because we've had several.
Let's not interrupt each other. Let's let each other finish our sentences. Go ahead, okay. Scott.
Thanks. We've had several conversations now, and you're 40 years old?
35.
35, okay. What was the last full-time job that you had, in the private sector?
Congressman Tipton, I'm a teacher.
That ought to be pretty easy.
I'm a teacher at a university.
That's full-time?
No, it's not a full-time job.
What
but
was
I've been
the
doing
last full-time job that you held, and what age were you when you had a
Congressman,
full-time job?
Congressman Tipton,
we're just
Wayne Aspinall was a teacher before he ran for Congress, and he did a fine job as a congressman.
So you haven't had a full-time
and Congressman
private
Tipton,
sector job.
Congressman Tipton.
Great. Okay, well,
I've been a waiter.
Okay,
well, I've been
we'll
a dishwasher.
Move on, Mr. Pace. I'm
guys,
controlling
guys,
the time.
Guys,
I've been a waiter. I've been a dishwasher.
Gentlemen.
I worked
gentlemen,
on cars, and the rest of us deserve a voice in Congress, too.
Gentlemen. Let's give,
and the last job was a
let's give
was as a waiter.
Let's give Congressman Tipton a little more time, if you would, less. And then if you guys cannot talk over each other, it all allows us all to follow what you're asking and what you're answering. So,
I think we settled. He has had a full-time private
it was
sector
a waiter.
Job. I'm also curious. Do you support a single-payer health care system?
Congressman Tipton, my views on health care is that we need to lower costs. We have to make it more
do
affordable, more accessible.
Do you support a single-payer healthcare system? That's fairly easy
Congressman
and
Tipton,
yes
it doesn't.
No? I say no. Can
Congressman
you say,
Tipton, if we were starting from scratch, it might make sense. But right now, under the current environment, it's not going to work.
And you would not have voted to repeal the IPAP board that's going to be making medical decisions for our senior citizens?
Congressman Tipton, I wouldn't have voted 33 times to repeal Obamacare just to score partisan political points.
I'll tell you what, Mr. Pace, we've got a real difference. Our senior citizens are not partisan politics, they're human beings, and we need to be standing up for them. You know, we might have a real good idea, maybe, since you don't want to really answer any questions directly. Who are you going to endorse in the presidential election, Barack Obama or Mitt Romney?
Congressman Tipton, I don't think it's any secret who either one of us are voting for.
Well, I'll tell you who I'm voting for. Who are you voting for?
I think it's pretty obvious who we're both voting for. You're
who?
Voting for the Republican, I'm voting for the Democrat.
You're voting for Barack Obama?
Congressman Tipton, obviously, I'm voting for the Democrat, you're voting for the Republican.
You know, it's a heck of a note when you can't even say, I'm voting for Mitt Romney, we need to get this economy moving.
Okay, now we're to the final stage, thank goodness, huh? Closing remarks, 2 minutes each. The order will be Sal, Scott, and Ms. Cassada. Sal?
Thank you, Tim. Thank you, Mesa. Thank you to Club 20. This is an opportunity I never would have imagined I would have the opportunity of representing this district, let alone being a candidate as the son of a mechanic and the youngest of 9 kids. It would have been impossible to think of as a kid growing up that I'd have this opportunity. There is a lot we agree on. We agree on fixes to jobs. We agree on solutions to the national debt. Unfortunately, there's too much gridlock in Washington, and there's too many folks who are more concerned with scoring political points instead of solving our problems. In Colorado, that's not how we do things. It's not how we treat each other in our communities. It's not how we do things at the legislature, where we passed a budget in the State House 64-1. And at the end of the day, it's not about politics. It's not about who's in the majority or who's in the minority. It's not about who wins this race. It's about real people. I shared the story about my dad earlier. And every single one of us has a family member who is going to hit retirement age. They're going to have a family member who is going to have to depend on Medicare at some point. And we have starkly different visions on these matters. And I think it's important that we have a voice again for our dads. I think it's important again that we have a voice again for our seniors. I think it's important again that we have a voice again for farmers and ranchers. I think it's important that we have a voice again for people like you and me. I'm Sal Pace and would appreciate your vote November 6th. Scott?
I'd like to thank all of you for taking the time to be here. This is a crossroads election for this nation. We do have a choice between two paths. And the person that we elect to represent and cast your vote in Washington, D.C., needs to be able to reflect those values. I've stood up for that farm and ranch community. I will continue to stand up for our senior citizens. We're going to fight back when it comes to things like the IPAP board making those medical choices. We will keep them between you and your doctor. We've also got a very clear choice and a very clear difference. When we look at the record, my opponent in his 4 years in the state legislature has voted for $1.6 billion worth of tax increases on hardworking people that are struggling just now to be able to pay the bills. We've got to be able to get this economy moving. We've got to be able to pay down this debt. And the best way to do it is to get our people working. I hope you share this with me, because the 3rd Congressional District can indeed lead the way. In this country, we should not be applauding a $2 billion loan for Brazil to be able to drill off of their shores. Let's develop American energy on American soil, put Americans back to work, and create jobs for the American people. This is our chance, this is our opportunity, and it won't come again. Once we cross that threshold, that tipping point of debt, we as a nation may not well be able to survive. This is our opportunity to pick up those reins once again, be able to guide our own future. That's and not time. Have the federal Scott. Government
Thank
of the United
much.
States achieve that.
Ms. Cassada.
I want to thank all of you for coming this evening, and I want to thank Club 20 and the university for allowing me the opportunity to be a voice. I just want to make one correction with Representative Tipton. There are 3 choices and 3 paths that you can choose from because we are on the ballot. And you haven't heard everything that I have to say. I actually have newspapers available if you want to pick one up. I produced it myself. I wrote every article in there except for one. I actually did the graphic design. That's what I do for a living. So pick one up. You can kind of see what I'm about and what I'm trying to do. I'd like to encourage all of you to exercise your civic duty. There are some young faces in the audience. It's incredibly encouraging. And regardless of what political party affiliation you are, I would encourage all of you to try and mentor in this next generation. There's a lot of good young people that are trying to do good things for our country. And don't prejudge them based on what their affiliation is. Instead, embrace them for their youth and embrace them for what they're trying to do, because they are the future. I'm a marketer, so I'm going to give out all of our websites. Sal Pace is pacefor Colorado.com. Representative Tipton's is votetipton.com. And mine is Cassida2012.com. And I ask you to go to those and, again, vet your candidates and look for who's going to have the most integrity for you in Washington, D.C. To my knowledge, I am the only candidate that has signed the voluntary U.S. House term limits declaration. I am term limiting myself to 6 years. I do not want to be a politician. I want to be a statesman. I want to represent you, and I want to come back into my community, continue to grow my business, and actually use my real estate license. So thank you so much again for this opportunity.
You've been listening to KVNF special election coverage, Club 20 Debates. This debate for Colorado's 3rd Congressional District between Republican incumbent Scott Tipton, Democratic challenger Sal Pace, and Independent challenger Tisha Cassida was recorded at the Club 20 Debates in Grand Junction on September 8th. Check out kvnf.org for more of the Club 20 Debates and all of KVNF's election coverage. Thanks for listening.